It's a pleasure to be able to offer a few comments. I have to wait for my own technology to boot up right now. Unfortunately, you don't have the video. I'm the only one who gets to see it, but at least that'll keep my comments online. I think that these are great issues. I should say that as an individual who's focused on Milton Friedman and Friedrich Hayek in my professional career, it's something that the Philadelphia Society is something that it's long been an aspiration of mine to attend a meeting, and to be able to address it is all the better. So I'm very appreciative for this opportunity. And waiting one more moment here, my topic will be, let's see if we can pull it up. Come on. There it is. It is titled Restoring Federalism Through Abolishing Public Sector Collective Bargaining. Now, there's a good thought. There's perhaps no issue whose resolution would do more to restore federalism in the United States than the abolition of state and local public employee collective bargaining. As one surveys the United States, there is an incredible tie between the growth of government in general, including at the national level, and the establishment of public sector unions. It is perhaps not too much to say that public sector unions are and have been the driving force behind the growth of government in the United States during the past 50 years. At this point, it is also almost not too much to say that at least at the state and local levels, the Democratic Party has become a virtual executive committee for public employee unions. It is not just a matter of the direction of resources to public employees, it is the entire tone of an approach to government. As public employee unions have grown, the size and extent of government have grown as well. This is because powerful public employee unions create a systemic bias toward more government activity. This was not always the case. Public employee unions did not characterize government in the United States for the first 180 years or so of our national existence. No less a liberal than Franklin Roosevelt said, quote, "Meticulous attention should be paid to the special relations and obligations of public servants to the public itself and to the government. The process of collective bargaining cannot be transplanted into the public service," unquote. Similarly, the first and longtime president of the AFL-CIO, George Meany, held that it was, quote, "impossible to bargain collectively with the government," unquote. Since the title of this session is The Fiscal and Regulatory Cliffs of Federalism, I thought it would be useful to review some of the fiscal challenges that public employee unions have caused and are causing. My own state of California is among the worst culprits. Here, public sector collective bargaining has created a virtual public employee union kleptocracy in which public employees enrich themselves at the expense of the general public and at the expense of truly beneficial programs and services. It is truly staggering the extent to which this occurs. In my home county of Santa Barbara, it is already the case that fully one-third of the county's annual general fund budget is expended not on current services for residents, but on pensions for retired public employees. There will soon be more beneficiaries in the county retirement system than employees working for the county. Similarly, in the city of Santa Barbara, public employees have barely more than 3 days per week that they have to show up to work and yet be considered full-time. How can this be? Unlike employees in the private sector, public employees typically receive 12 days of sick leave per year. And this is not use it or lose it sick leave, but can, if not used, be retained as credit for days worked at retirement. Similarly, employees in the city of Santa Barbara receive 10 days of holidays per year, which are also always taken on the preceding Monday or the following on the preceding Friday or following Monday if they happen to fall on the weekend. Public employees, in addition, receive 4 personal necessity days each year and up to 5 days for bereavement leave. After 5 to 10 years of employment, vacation leave can be 20 to 25 days per year. Add it all up, and public employees are working a four-day week. How then does this become a three-day week in Santa Barbara and elsewhere? Among the benefits that employees in Santa Barbara and elsewhere receive are flexible time schedules, whereby for purportedly working an extra half hour or so on other days, they receive every 10th day off, every other Friday. That's an additional 24 days per year. Finally, with furloughs of up to 3 weeks affecting many employees, hundreds of employees in the city of Santa Barbara and elsewhere are working barely more than 3 days per week, yet they are full-time. It's no exaggeration to say that public employees work a shorter career, they work fewer days, and they retire with better pension benefits than any other employees. Similarly, when it comes to public employee pensions, many public employees, most in states such as California, receive benefits that private employees can only dream of. Public safety is regrettably the worst culprit. Here, the standard retirement benefit in other states is becoming 3% at age 50, meaning that public safety officers can retire at as young as age 50 with 3% of their final salary times the number of years they worked, up to 90% of their final salary. But even non-public safety officers have exceptionally generous pensions in California and elsewhere. A typical non-public safety public employee retirement benefit in California is 2.7% of final salary times the number of years worked starting at age 55 up to 75% of final salary. This means even if you don't work as a police officer or firefighter, you can retire at age 55 in many California municipalities with up to 3/4 of final salary. The fact is that public employee pensions are turning millions of public employees into de facto millionaires upon retirement. This is simply unaffordable and unsustainable. And the problem will not become better anytime soon. The number of retired workers will skyrocket in the years ahead, and retired employees are living longer than ever. Moreover, there are now, because of retirement costs, fewer government employees paying into retirement systems. Notwithstanding the publicity it has received, the public employee pension crisis has barely started. It reflects the larger circumstance in our society of a disproportionate share of retired people compared to working people. This will only increase in the years ahead as the number of workers to retired people declines, per Social Security statistics, from 3 workers for every retired person to 2 workers for every retired person. As noted, these trends are unsustainable. What then is to be done? Using the principles of federalism, the answers will be mostly found at the local and state levels, often through the initiative process. Far too often, notwithstanding the fiscal crises that local and state governments across the United States face, elected representatives have been unwilling to tackle the fiscal cliffs of public employee compensation, and therefore the people themselves will have to reduce the compensation of public employees through voters' initiatives. Since I'm from California, the initiative process is particularly congenial to me, and this may not be necessary everywhere. The success of Governor Scott Walker and of the legislature in Wisconsin in reforming public employee compensation there through limiting collective bargaining for most public employees shows that it is possible to effect reform through the standard state legislative process. But this will not be the case everywhere. For this reason, it is encouraging that in California in recent years, a number of cities have begun to place initiatives on the ballot to limit collective bargaining or reduce the compensation of public employees, often supported by Democrats concerned about cuts to public services as a result of excessive public employee compensation. The reform of public employee compensation should allow broad coalitions to develop that will reform public employee compensation on a state-by-state and locality-by-locality basis. In many respects, the reform of public employee compensation will be federalism at its finest. The answer to this crucial problem will not be found, for the most part, through national legislation, but by state and local legislation. The stakes in reforming public employee compensation at the state and local levels are huge. There are more than 15 million state and local government workers in the United States. The amount of their overcompensation, when considering the current value of promised pension benefits, runs into the trillions of dollars. But as indicated at the outset, the issue is not just excessive compensation for public employees, which prevents funds from being used for services or lower taxes, as important as these are. The problem is that by so excessively empowering public employee unions, particularly at the state and local levels, the entire atmosphere and environment of government changes. There becomes a systemic bias to increase the role and extent of government activity. Preferred solutions always become government solutions. In 2009, for the first time, the number of unionized public employees exceeded the number of unionized private employees. This is a very deleterious trend and deserves to be turned back. There can be no general reduction in government and no return to the principles of federalism as long as public employee unions have as much power as they currently do. It is virtually not an overstatement to say that the difference between red America and blue America is a difference in the power of public employee unions in red states compared to blue states. The hundreds of millions of dollars that public employee unions have to spend on legislative races at all levels in blue states is a major reason, perhaps the major reason, for the success of pro-public employee union legislators in these states. If we wish to reduce the size of government and restore genuine power to states and locales, the first step will be to reduce the power of public employee unions. This will allow the restoration of limited government and federal principles at the local, state, and national levels. Thank you.